This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, we believe in sharing and giving flowers to the great individuals when it comes to entertainment, when it comes to sports, showing tribute, tipping tribute, giving tribute, showing flowers, giving flowers. And this is a flower giving episode as well. 8-time Pro Bowler, all with the Minnesota Vikings. 1990s All-Decade Team member, Pro Football Hall of Famer. You can follow him on Twitter at ChrisCarter80. And he is the host of a great new podcast called Wide Receiver One, which you can download anywhere where podcasts are found. Search WR1, Wide Receiver One, an outstanding podcast. Mr. Chris Carter is joining us here. All things covered. Pat Peterson, Brian McFadden. Chris, how you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for the invite. I greatly appreciate it. I've listened to a couple of you guys' podcasts, and I followed both of your careers. Pat's still playing and everything. So it's nice to see the combination. It's nice to see so many guys trying to work in the media because it's a great platform for people, for your personalities. So no doubt. Thank you.
And Chris, I'm going to jump right into it real quick. I'm gonna take you all the way back to Blanche Ely versus St. Thomas.
Hey, Pat, I forgot all three of us from Broward on this podcast. Yeah. So take them back. Take them back to St. Thomas.
To coach that squad that they had. I don't believe you guys won state that year, but you guys went pretty deep. Mm-hmm. In the tournament. But do you remember what happened on that punt return that Pierre fumbled initially and we recovered? Mm-hmm. Flag that was called on that Friday afternoon?
I don't know. It seems like every time St. Thomas is involved in the game, the people come feeling as if we've already paid off the referees, let alone the good football players. Now, you just need a little bit of help that day. If you would have had a little bit of help that day, you would have beat us, by yourself. That was my first experience with Patrick Peterson. I mean, wing T. I mean, forget defense. Like, I knew at that time, it was almost like Little League. I was like, man, check his birth certificate, man. Where that dude come from? I mean, you truly, not only as a competitor, but as a young person, when you go around and you play this game, it helps to have a nice body. And you got one of the greatest bodies, man, ever built for playing this game of football. And that was one of the first things that I recognized. And one day when we're sitting around having lunch and they're getting you fitted for a gold jacket and everything, you're going to see why you fit into being in the hall, on and off the field. But it's a lot of big people in the hall. And that's one of the first things that really jumped to my attention. And then, you know, knowing about the family, your father, the training and all that, like, that's what I remember about Patrick Peterson. I don't remember the refs being involved too much.
Yeah, one thing about in Broward County, St. Thomas get a lot of home cooking. Yeah. A lot of, especially if you play St. Thomas at St. Thomas.
Oh, stop, man.
Hey,
we take good care of the referees, man. We have nice food. In their locker room. Now that's something we do.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Pat, they cut the scoreboard off on us my senior year when they had Tony Brown, Joe Bruce. I think Joe was Isaac's Bruce, like nephew. They had
that
some
was right
ballers.
Before I got there. Yeah.
Yep. And we were driving, needed like a 3 points to win, and they had a brand new scoreboard that they just built at the stadium.
The neighborhood is old though, man. You can't change the electronics, man.
Man, look, Chris, that's a brand new scoreboard, and the clock went off. And so the referee said, we're going to keep time on our wrist. We was like, oh, boy, we know what time it is now. we already know what time it is now, man. We went from having a minute 45 to 35 seconds in two plays, and both were incompletions.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, coaching in Broward, I coached at St. Thomas for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And it really, and I'm from the Midwest. I'm originally from Ohio. So in Ohio, we got great athletes and everything, but we have good coaching. Like the guys that are involved in the game and everything really teach the kids to play the right way. When I got to Florida, man, and being 16 years in the NFL, I was able to see why, with all the different combinations of culture and how they go about football, even from a little jet, man, they serious about that football.
Right.
And there's so many good athletes. It's like, it's not hype. Like, it is really not hype. Every year, high school, you're going to get 300, 320, 350 Division I football players.
No question.
From the state of Florida. And a lot of them, you know, around the 954. I mean, they right up in there between Palm Beach and Miami. That little nugget right there of property, I would take that against any same dimensions, population, anywhere in the United States. I don't care. L.A., Texas, I don't care.
No doubt.
Because I've seen it. And I'm quarterbacks, D linemen, DBs, receivers. I'm talking about dudes that can flat out run. Not people talking about it. I'm talking about dudes that can flat get it.
Yeah.
So much respect.
Yeah,
we appreciate you. Well, Chris, let's jump into your podcast in life right now. You dominated on the gridiron. Now you're dominating on the podcast level as well. So far on your podcast, you've chatted with Julian Edelman, Allen Robinson, Terry McLaurin, Calvin Johnson. What has been your biggest takeaway talking to this generation of wide receivers? And what have you learned anything from them based on how they attack the game compared to how you attack the game?
Well, if you look at it and you know, I know Pat's held a lot of football camps and everything. Mm-hmm. And just over the last 20 years, what position kids want to play, it's totally changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the ability that in Little League football, kids are throwing the ball more and with a little more accuracy, say, than before. So now the coaches, there's more spread offenses. So guys are starting to become more equipped to play wide receiver and play at a high level because of the coaching, not only of the position, but offense and how they're going to attack defenses. So for me, it's really interesting what drew them to the position, what type of players drew them to the position, and some of the attributes as far as the creativity, the acrobatics, the mental and physical toughness, you know, getting into their head, trying to figure out what drew you to a position that drew me to it? Because I really felt like I could make a difference in the game. I grew up in a different era, and they weren't allowing as many of us to play quarterback at the time. So for me, wide receiver was the next best position. Pat P, you can look this up too. Beef Hat, you can look it up. Chris Carter, All-State, free safety, 10 interceptions in 10 games, only played in the secondary 1 year. Everything they do back there, I was snatching it.
we don't disagree with that. Your right. Hands was impressive.
No doubt about it. Did you have any multi-pick games?
I did have one game. I had two picks in, but the best play I ever made was we were playing a local rival. Uh-huh. And I had looked at the tape and I saw this pass they like to run, especially in third and long. And it was this wide receiver named Robbie Long. Mm-hmm. And they like to go to him across the middle. And, man, I saw that the tackle, because, you know, my first read as a free safety is reading that play side tackle. Mm-hmm. And when he took that first step back to set, I took about three nice backpedal steps and started looking for Robbie Long. And, man, I caught him coming from my right to my left around his midsection. Thank goodness he's still alive. But they had to lift him from on a helicopter to the hospital.
Wow. You definitely would got ejected. That'd have been a target and probably not.
I exploded on it. And, you know, of course, I was in the play and everything, but I didn't really understand the significance of it. When I went to Ohio State, his girlfriend came up to me on campus and like, are you Chris Carter? I was like, yes. Didn't know what was going on. Maybe because it helped with my homework. It was freshman year. It's like, I'm the girlfriend of Robbie Long. I was like, oh, my goodness. I hit him hard. Like, he put him in the hospital. I said, it was a perfect strike.
Hey Chris, on your podcast you talked about you obviously had an opportunity to talk with some of the NFL greats in this league. What do you take on the young receivers? Well, not young, you know, but the receiver duo that we have in Minnesota with Adam and Justin?
I'm very impressed. And really because sometimes when you get in these situations, there can be conflict. Mm-hmm. And a guy's established himself. He's with the team. And with Thielen, he's got a great story. I mean, you walking onto the NFL and you become a star in the NFL, one of the top 100 players. You make Pro Bowls. You have consistency. I mean, you made a good living for yourself.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, man, I've had it happen. You know, me and Jake Reed have 4 straight 1,000-yard years. And what does Dennis Green do? We go out and draft Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we had an NFL record, 4 straight, both guys getting 1,000 yards. And then we draft Randy Moss. People say, man, when you called Randy, what did you talk about? I talked to Randy about a lot of shit. Immediately, I had to call Jake. And, you know, because there's only one football. And sometimes, you know, younger players, more so younger players than the veteran players, because we have a legacy in this league that we're going to teach these kids the right way. Mm-hmm. Because somebody taught us the right way.
Yes,
and we just believe our overall ability. Like people say, it might cheat me out of a year on the back end, but I'm going to still do it the right way, man.
Yeah.
Because these veterans, we give a lot of coach credit to the coaches. But without the veteran players, when you come into this league, man, the younger players would be lost. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, I thought I owed it to the profession. I owed it to the fellow football player. I owed it to my squad to try to get these young players as much knowledge as possible and to continue the tradition. We've been playing great football in the NFL for 100 years. And if we keep having guys like yourself, keep taking young players under your wing, that we'll continue to enjoy the game, and that the little kids out there that are trying to be us, that the league would be ready for them and it'd be a good league. And you leave the league. That's one thing that Larry Fitzgerald, you know, I just told him, just make a promise to me. You don't ever have to give me a dime, but just promise me you'll leave the NFL in better shape than when you came. Mm-hmm. Make me that promise. And he was able to make me that promise. I think he lived out that. And Pat, you were a recipient of that. And B Fat, and you've been a recipient of things like that. So, you know, seeing them acquiesce to each other. Justin Jefferson, no, I'm an understudy. I know Adam Thielen is the senior guy. And both of them understanding their role and coming together so that the purple can play football, so that their passing game could be effective. That's the thing I'm probably most proud of, and that I saw the mutual respect of how they're going to go about the game, how they're going to receive information from one another, and understanding that both of them need each other on and off the field so they maximize their ability.
Right.
Without great knowledge and insight coming from a Hall of Famer. Chris, you talked about one of your best plays in high school, right, when you hit Robbie Long. But let's highlight one of your best plays in college. Go back to, 1985 Citrus Bowl, Ohio State versus BYU. And we're going to post this clip on Twitter as well so our listeners and viewers can actually see the play that I'm talking about. You had a catch in that game that probably would have broken the internet today. If it happened in today's game, it probably would have went viral for sure. Yeah. Describe that play for us and how good were you feeling after that play?
Oh, this was nice. I know exactly what you're talking about. Along the right sideline, mm-hmm. The cornerback mm-hmm. was thrown out of bounds. It was third and long, and they had played a soft cover 3. I mean, it was BYU. They didn't have a whole bunch of athletes on the back end.
Yep.
And the guy was so far off of me, we weren't going to be able to get deep on him. And then the undercovers, he was worrying about throwing a pick. So he had to put a little more air on it. And I didn't wear any gloves in college, but a couple of games in college. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I could get it was with my left. And I think I had on the Nike Air, the high tops or the mids in that game. I remember it all. I had my wrist taped up. Like halfway, or I remember it all, but I snatched that one.
Yeah.
And the coaches on the sideline were saying something to me, and I looked back over, and I said, man, I'm the best in college and headed to the NFL soon.
Yes, sir. Hey, well, talking about
I had gotten a couple friends, the DBs, Yeah, I'm going to tell on them BYU dudes, because they, you know, they got a lot of restrictions at BYU. It's not like LSU, Ohio State, stuff like that, Florida State. You know, we're pretty free. We have some hardcore guys. So we play BYU, and we're going to a couple of the little receptions and everything. So we make friends with the defensive backs, because they got a that's where the African-Americans are on BYU's football team. All right? Yep. They're in the secondary. So we start chit-chatting with them, and dude was like, hey, man, what you drinking on? We was like, hey, man, we got some, you know, Hennessy, rum and Coke. You know, what you got? He's like, oh, man, you know, we can't drink and everything. I said, so y'all just drinking Coke and everything? He's like, yeah. He said, but hey, man, they look the same in a glass. He said, if you could order us up a couple. I was like, oh, let's do it, man. Let's do it. I said, let's do it. We sent them over about 5 or 6 drinks and everything. And we knew they weren't going to be doing too much drinking, and we knew he was going to blast them and everything. So that was my BYU experience. Yeah, we got them some drinks. Yeah, them boys at BYU was drinking and everything. Just like the boys at the state school.
They found a way to get it in.
Right. Well, you, Buddy Ryan made a famous quote about you. He said, all he does is catch touchdowns. What made you such a beast and get in an end zone in your day?
Well, a lot of people, you know, don't necessarily know my whole background. And I really came from a basketball family. I had 3 brothers. My oldest brother, Butch, played in the NBA 7 years. And I would say, like, Pat, when I met you at 16, 17, I was a better basketball player at that time than a football player. Compliments to your homeboy, Eddie Jones. That's one of my guys, man. We hang out, EJ and everything. NBA, Lakers, Heat, all-around great guy. But I was a better basketball player. So for me, on the football field, it became, especially in those contested balls, it became more like a jump ball. And I had like a 38-inch vertical, and I didn't have blazing speed. So I used to always try to figure out, okay, on the field, I can't utilize this whole field. Because if we backed up, I'm going to have to make a hell of a play to score from there. But I knew the closer we got to the 50, you was getting closer into my range. And once we went on the other side of the 50, I knew I could make 1 or 2 guys miss and I could score. So I tried to map out certain areas. Red zone, sideline, between the hashes. I knew how many steps I would take. If I was getting inside man, if I was getting pressed, how many strides that I could go before I run into that Mike or that weak side linebacker. If I'm in the slot, I'm running the post corner. If I hit the numbers, if I flatten it out, how many strides I'm going to have before I have to catch it on the sideline. Sideline's 53 1/3 yards wide. So for me, the end zone, I never go into more than 8 yards deep in the end zone. That back line, y'all ain't going to never cover that. No one in football covers that. And if the guy wants to throw it high, it gives me ability to fade with the football and make more of those catches compared to drifting out of bounds. So for me, it was more strategy. Like, I knew that I was limited as far as speed. And what parts of this game am I going to be able to take advantage of? What parts of this field am I going to take advantage of? And I always felt like I was one of the smartest players out there. And I would do the things that the other receivers wouldn't do. So all that information, I compiled it. And I really concentrated. When the coaches put in red zone, man, I was so zeroed in. I used to memorize all the red zone plays, what down, what sequence, what coverage the coach was expecting. And then if the coach ever asked me for suggestions, I was always on top of it and thought about it like a coach. And, you know, so for me, the same way you've done, Pat, with bump and run, like you've always played bump and run, not just because it's bump and run, but you have really thought that with your speed, with your football IQ, with your body mass, with you loving the physical contact, loving the chest match, the best way for you to play the game was going to be bump and run.
Right.
That's the same way that I realized with the red zone. Third down. I knew that those were the, that's how I was going to set myself apart from other guys. And then I always believed this. I catch all the balls that everybody catch. And I catch a few that no one can catch. And if you do that in the red zone, it's going to allow you the ability to be able to help your football team win a lot of football games.
Man, you dropping some jewels right there. And I appreciate that knowledge, because there are a lot of people that listen to us or watch us or just casually watch the game of football, and they just think it's all about athleticism. They think there's no thinking involved. But strategically speaking, you got to have a game plan in place as a player, not just from the coaches that are up top and on the sideline.
Absolutely. But
the great players have a game plan in place. They know their strengths, they know their weaknesses, and they know how to, you know, sweep some things under the rug that most people might not know they have. Man, that's some dope information there. And because of how well you were able to dominate, especially in the red zone, when you retired, Chris, you were second all-time in wide receiver touchdowns behind Jerry Rice, the legend, you know, the GOAT Jerry Rice. Now, there are a few other guys that played a little longer that played and eventually surpassed you. But when you retired, man, you were the second best to ever do it getting into the end zone. So hats off to you and how you were able to master 7 points. I mean, if fantasy football was around when you were playing, especially how it is now, you'd be a big-time fantasy getter. I know that much because I'm heavy in fantasy.
It was there. Fantasy was just getting started and everything.
Okay, okay. Well, you know me, I was younger, and then when I started playing, I didn't know what fantasy was until I actually retired.
Right.
Yeah. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially from a defensive perspective, they got in the defensive teams far more involved. Beginning of the fantasy, they weren't that involved as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when Dennis Green got to Minnesota, what changed? Because it seemed like in totality, the playoffs were destined for you guys when he was there. Green made the playoffs 8 out of the 9 seasons with the Minnesota Vikings. So what changed when he became the head coach?
Man, everything changed, man. Everything changed. We immediately changed our offense from a pro set, I formation, to a 3-receiver set, spread the field. And we were going to run a combination of Washington, Joe Gibbs, what they were running with their 3-receiver sets, and the West Coast. Get the ball out of your hand, get the ball in space to your playmakers, you know, 3 outs, 4 outs, 5 outs, as much as possible, put a stress on the defense. So we ran a combination of offensive systems, but we didn't have necessarily the stadium with the resources and everything, but it really became a place. If a guy wanted to salvage his career, if a guy had a bad reputation, they could come to Minnesota and Dennis Green was going to give him a shot. I mean, man, we had a lot of guys, man, that, you know, who I knew just around the league. And Dennis and I used to sit down and have personnel meetings once a week. And you'd say, man, who, you know this guy? It's like, hey, man, Jerry Ball, man. We should go out and get JB, man. He's a good dude, great locker room guy, great leader. We could put him in there about 30 snaps. Keep him in shape now. We up here in Minnesota. we might have to get a new sweat box, you know, to keep him down, you know, maybe under 330 in the wintertime. But you're talking about a football player, a leader, Dale Carter as a cornerback.
Ooh, Dale was nice out there. The line of scrimmage, whoo.
Yeah.
That Dale put the fear in you too now.
Yes, sir.
You had to make up your mind. This is what you want to do today. Dale used to say, how you want to do it today, old man?
I forgot you played with Dale. I remember Dale coming out of Tennessee,
yes,
going to Kansas City.
Yes.
Man, Dale went hard. He went hard off the field and on the field.
Oh, absolutely. Man, Dale, we brought Dale up there and a bunch of other. Dale and Jake are brothers. And so that was a natural for us to bring him up there.
Yeah.
I became good friends. You know your boy Boucher, man, Corey Fuller.
Yeah, yeah.
I sat him Boucher down the first day and took care of him.
That's what's up.
In his days there, and made him come to Bible study on Thursday because he used to always want to come get a home-cooked meal. I said, okay, it's like your grandma. She told you, if you don't go to church, you ain't going to be eating on Sunday. You live in my house, you don't go. So I told him, hey, bro, you got to come to Bible study to get that grub on Thursday. You know, Pat, we reel them in with the food and drink, get them on in and everything.
A hot plate, the best way to do it.
No doubt about it.
Absolutely, man. With Dennis Green, he changed it. Even far with the coaching staff, you know, he gave Tony Dungy his shot. He gave Brian Billick his shot. But for African-American coaches, we always had 6-7 African-American coaches. Mm. And I think that that's even one thing that the NFL is missing right now, the legacy of Dennis Green. Because he passed away before he should. But, man, he mentored. His coaching tree is amazing.
Right.
And he was into teaching football and growing young men up, taking advantage of the culture, taking advantage of the NFL. Every Tuesday was Community Tuesday. You was not going to sit on your butt. You was going out in the community and make somebody feel better because you got a great life. Man, I owe so much to Dennis Green. He grew me as a leader. He challenged me to challenge guys different ways, on the field, off the field. It was, I don't know where, you know, that I would be. He really helped develop me, you know, as a leader, and gave a lot of coaches, a lot of players opportunities. So Dennis Green is a bad boy, man.
Yeah.
Bad dude. Good dude, man. Really good dude. Funny.
Yeah.
Funny as can be, but serious about that football. Underrated as a coach. And his ability to evaluate talent was so, so special.
Yeah.
Dennis is definitely a legend, and will forever be missed.
No question.
You also play with all sorts of quarterbacks for the Vikings, like Jim McMahon, Warren Moon, Brad Johnson, Cunningham,
Rich Gannon,
Dante Culpepper. Who do you think you had the best chemistry with, and why?
Man, Warren Moon. First ballot Hall of Famer. Warren Moon is on a whole nother level, man. Mm-hmm. Besides Tom Brady at 44 yesterday throwing 5 touchdown passes, no one as a 40-year-old had thrown 5 touchdown passes except Warren Moon.
Mm.
Warren Moon used to take care of, man, he had one of them gladiator bodies, big old chest, lifting weights, taking care of himself, man, long before people. And dude went up there and did 6 years of hard time up in the CFL.
He said hard time.
Yeah.
It's a different life than the NFL.
I mean, no one would give him the opportunity, but yeah. Warren Moon, he knew so much football. And I was only able to play 2 seasons with him. But you mentioned a lot of guys who cut their teeth, Brad, Rich Gannon, both of them being in the Super Bowls. Brad won a Super Bowl. I played 2 seasons with Warren Moon. I want you to think about this, man. Only 2 seasons. 244 catches.
Done.
And what? 24 touchdowns.
Wait a minute. 244. So you basically had 122 each year.
Stop reading my mail. That's what I brought you up on record 1994, man. 122.
I want to make sure, I know my math ain't all the way good, but it gotta be good enough. That's what I got in my head.
Florida State, we'll help you through it.
Man.
Back
244?
Back to back. And Warren, after the season ended, we broke the NFL record at 122-7. People say, what are you going to work on? Next year, watch the touchdowns. Next year, we went 122-17 touchdowns.
What? Oh, hey, CC, man, people ain't talking about that enough. That might be the best two-year span from any wide receiver quarterback in the history of the game got to be.
Right.
Let me think.
That's what got the party started, man. I didn't make my Pro Bowl until my 7th season, my first Pro Bowl until my 7th season. So I had to cook with grease, man. I couldn't be fooling around with no charcoal and no wood chip. I had already tricked off enough time. I had to get busy.
Wow, man. And you got to look at it like this, too. In that era, you know, you guys threw the ball a lot in Minnesota, but it's not like how it is now. You know what I'm saying? It was still generic. You know, you first P&10 is 12 personnel. You know what I mean? 2 backs, tight end, 2 wide receivers. You don't go to a spread attack, 3 wide receivers or 4 wide receivers until it's a passing down. So you did numbers and mostly in a generic style running type offense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we really changed the whole process. We made them go 3 receivers. Like, man, we used to go to practice, man, and we used to rip the defense. And they'd be like, man, what y'all going so hard for? I said, man, we got to convince these fools. The 3 receivers is the way. So ain't no days off, man. Ain't no days. We were in that era where you had to convince the coaches that first down throwing the ball was the best. That was the best look you was going to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better than that second. They bring that nickel, roll that in, dime on third. Man, come on, man. First down, size them up, man. Put them out there. Whatever they want to get. 4, 8, 3, 2, 2, man. Let's go. First down, let's get it. But you have to prove to people. I try to tell young people all the time, everybody want a handout. My mom told me, if you ever come back to the house and tell me the coach ain't playing you enough, it's your damn fault.
Yeah.
Why, mama? Because you didn't prove to him in practice that he was a fool not to put you in there. So it's your fault.
Yeah.
So for me, I ain't got no empathy. Oh, man, should he be in there? Should he be in there? Let the people know. Pat, I remember your first day when you went to LSU. It wasn't no doubt. What he was going to do. Hey, what number that dude wearing, man? They put him in that number? All right. And let history begin. You have to put that on people. You can't go out there with reputation and all. No. And I learned that from a very, very young age. So That's what young people should be, man. It's about competition. These new athletes we got, everybody want a handout, everybody want a guarantee, everyone, man, prove it to the people.
Yeah. Right. I can tell you this much, that 244, man, that might be the best 2 years span stretch. Yeah. Any wide receiver, we're gonna let Eric do some research, but I'm willing to bet. I don't know if it's a wide receiver did that in 2 years, CC. Yes. We're gonna find out for sure. Yeah, and talking about three receiver sets, man, you mentioned this earlier in our conversation. The Vikings drafted Randy Moss in 1998. When did you realize he wasn't going to just be a good player, but he was going to be one of the all time greats?
Man, first day. Hey, Pete. I play with 8 Hall of Famers, man. These dudes don't walk the same.
Yeah.
Bruh, they don't think the same. Hey, man, I don't care if it's a baseball. I don't care if it's a horse. I don't care if it's a jump shot. Man, when you see it, you see, man, you be like, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, we was in the locker room after, man, Pat carried the ball like 30 times, man. They was running some wing T BS stuff. No type of scheme. Give me the ball, hike it to him, and he getting ready to beat. Man, we got about 10 Division I players. And then you leave the state of Florida and you go to LSU. I thought you knew, man. Like, these dudes aren't normal, man.
Yeah.
Let me tell you who Randy Moss is, man. He could do everything that I used to think about as a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. He could do it with his feet or his hands. Like, there's certain routes, there's certain positions as a DB you can't get in unless you special.
Yeah.
There's even a certain plan, a certain elite plan in the way elite DBs plan. Man, I watched video of Prime Time. I played against 6 Hall of Fame corners. We're talking about Daryl Green, Rob Woodson, Prime Time, all these dudes. Mike Haynes, I played bumper. These dudes played bump run against me. Man, these ain't normal guys, man. They're not normal creatures.
Yeah.
Randy Moss on the first workout, I knew he was special. Me and Dennis Green had set up. When we drafted him, he was coming to Florida. Pat, you know I've been living in Boca forever. Mm-hmm. He bought a place in Boca. The first day we worked out, me and Coach Green scheduled a call a couple hours later, and Coach said, "What you think?" I said, "Hey, man, tricks is for kids." Like, he's amazing. And I said, "Coach, he got a hunger and a nastiness to him. He ain't gonna have no problem with the league, man."
Yeah, he's gonna be all right.
Now, he couldn't bench press 135 at the time. I said, but Coach, we'll protect him.
So
we put that 45 on there.
He's struggling.
Man, get this shit.
So would you say the 98 team was the best team to not win a Super Bowl going 15-1 in the regular season? You guys lost to Atlanta that year, 30-27 in the overtime conference championship.
Yeah, 11-point favorites, big-time favorites.
Yeah, 11-point favorites in that conference championship game.
We had 5 starters get knocked out during the game. The Falcons played an unbelievable game.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, as you guys know, there are 3 or 4 moments of truth during football games. People always like to say, oh, it's the last kick, it's the kicker. But it's typically a handful of plays. When you go back over it, that they could have made a difference.
Yep.
We had a couple of drives in the second quarter that we had a chance to go up 21-17 points. Because we had the lead all the way until the game went into overtime.
Yeah.
Like, we had the lead the whole game. And right before halftime, we're up 14 points. We get the ball back, maybe 2 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. Coach said, okay, we're going to be aggressive, just like we have all year. We're going to go for it. Second or third down, Cunningham fumbles. Chuck Smith makes a great strip sack. They get the ball inside the 10-yard line, go in to score. Now we're in a dogfight. We go into halftime. Instead of up by 14, we up. Momentum then shifted. We only up by 7. Mm-hmm. We had a bunch of starters get hurt late in the game. That's no excuse. They played great. We had a field goal kicker that was perfect all season, missed a 39-yarder to get, not put us up, to make us up by 10.
Yeah.
10 late in the game, which would have sealed the deal for us. So he misses the kick. First and second down, we shut him down. I think we have a 3rd and 9 in the corner. I mean, I like y'all. God bless y'all. The right corner gets got on a out and up.
Mm.
And they get that big chunk play. Next thing you know, they go on and score, and we in overtime. And we in the fight for our life. So it was a great team. Highest scoring team of the 80s and the 90s. I think we averaged 34 points a game.
Yeah.
Bad thing is, when you train kids, you practice hard. People say, well, practice till you make perfect. I've watched Nick Saban, the life football. Mm-hmm. Y'all should watch that. And any person serious about being a DB, just watch it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But he talks about, I want you to practice until you can't do it wrong.
Mm.
And I had never, ever heard that before.
Wow.
Never, ever heard anything, you know, like that. And it's right, on the Football Life. It just came on the NFL Network. And as you guys can see, just like yourself, that's why you made your living. I'm into football.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like I'm into it, and I'm into the ugly parts of it that make you play well.
Yeah.
A lot of guys ain't into that. See my little dog back there?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's dope. We're definitely going to check that out. Nick Saban, we had him on the show during last season, and he came and dropped some jewels on us as well. So we definitely appreciate that. We're going to transition to the superlative part of our show, and it's going to be a little different for us today. You made our job easy for us because, you know, you tweeted out last week all the different body parts it takes you would construct to put together the perfect wide receiver number one. So let's talk about those choices that you decided to come up with. Size, frame. You decided to go Calvin Johnson, honorable mention, DK Metcalf. Why Calvin?
Well, Calvin, it's let me teach you guys something. The taller the receiver, the less advantage he has as far as route running.
Mm-hmm.
And why? Because the higher your hip joint is off the ground, people wonder, why do short guys have short area quickness? Because their hips is lower to the ground. Mm-hmm. For a big guy to rise up and to rise back down and be able to get in and out of his breaks like a smaller guy. So it's, people think, oh man, I want height as a receiver. It's an advantage. Yeah, some of it. But it's a huge disadvantage if you don't know how to utilize
them. Right.
So for me, I think the perfect size is still a little smaller as far as Randy and Calvin. Calvin's 6'5". You know, so for me, size and huge size, that's why I put Calvin in there. And I wanted the modern day football fan to realize that I keep my eye on the current game. It helps blend the past with the current.
Right.
And if you look at someone like DK Metcalf, if I only had the canvas of the game today, it would be someone like DK Metcalf. Hope that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And then you go to strength, you know, Terrell Owens, honorable mention, Sterling Sharp. I love that. I love Sterling Sharp. You talk about.
Bro, you talking about some big dudes, some of the guys running through people. I saw T.O. last month. I'm like, goodness gracious. He didn't find the fountain of youth. He slept there for a few nights.
No he doubt.
He still got that 20 sheen on his skin and muscle tone.
Right. And T.O. was a strong runner. It was like you knew he had power when he was running. He wasn't just gliding. Yeah. He was a strong runner.
Yeah, and, he had a little gallop to him.
Too. Yeah.
So, you know, T.O. and I, we've had some interesting back and forth through the years and everything, but I still have respect for what he accomplished playing the game. And if I'm going to be fair to the fans out there, I need to give people credit. And that's what he should have credit for. And that's why he made a very, very hard list.
No question. IQ, you got Larry Fitzgerald. route running footwork, you got Marvin Harrison slash Chad Ochocinco. Work ethic, mentality, Jerry Rice, honorable mention, Michael Irvin, hands, DeAndre Hopkins, Chris Carter, speed, Tyreek Hill, Randy Moss. So I think that's a guy no DB want to face. If you ever can put that type of skill set all in one body. But last question I have for you, when you look at Tyreek Hill and Randy Moss, now you saw Randy Moss at his peak prime years, and Tyreek Hill is still in his prime, I would say. Who do you think is faster? Who do you think would have been faster in the race, Randy Moss or Tyreek Hill?
I'm going to tell you something, man. When you watch Tyreek Hill on film, man, you have to make sure. You be like, man, is that right? I mean, it's like, you know, y'all do on bootleg high school videos, be speeding them little jokers up and everything.
Yeah.
They'd be like, man, did they touch that?
Right.
Is that real? Now, Tyreek Hill, I'm going to give him credit because he's got a few things that most fast guys don't have. Number one, he's got hands.
Yeah.
Number two, he got courage. He got heart. He ain't no chump.
Yeah.
Number three, most fast guys can't play the ball off the ground in the air. He's nice in the air.
Yeah.
So for me, he is the best fast football player that we've ever seen in the history of this game.
Yeah. And he's so quick, too. He's not just fast. His quickness.
And, you know, he is fortunate because 99% of all the players that have ever played this game, you guys realize in 101 years we've been playing, only 29,000 men have ever been paid to play this game. Only 12,000 of us played more than 4 years. Mm. That's the best fast dude to display. All right. Yes, now I'm going to make another comparison to a guy y'all like. He got that Deion type foot speed.
Yeah.
Deion at a different level, man. Mm-hmm. When he turned it on, it's like everyone stopped running. He can run as fast as he want to run. It's like, Deion, how fast are you? Two steps faster than that dude. Which one? Anyone chasing me? Anyone chasing me? And he was one of the first guys, and I love Prime, man. I love what Prime is about. I've been knowing since that right out of high school, Florida State, all the marketing. That's a smart guy.
Yeah.
People don't give Prime credit. And I'm getting ready to jump on the bandwagon. B, Deion going to be the coach at Florida State.
Ooh.
That's what's going to happen.
Ooh.
All right? Just give it a little time to percolate.
Yeah, just a little time to percolate. That's it.
Florida State 0-3.
Yeah, we're 0-3 right now. CC ain't looking good. It don't feel good. I can tell you that much.
In the next 3 years, there would nothing that would make the great late Bobby Bowden happier than one of the guys he mentored to build get that program back. If Prime is at Florida State, I don't want to be nowhere within a 6-hour ride recruiting against him.
Oh, yeah. I don't think no one would disagree with you.
Right. So, okay. But that's why I put those guys in there. Tyreek Hill, special football player. Even when you look over the 100 years of playing the game, he has attributes that most fast guys don't have. Now, Randy Moss he can run as fast as the ball's in the air. And no one in pro football history can track a football like him. He is a world-class center fielder. Yeah, he can see the spin on the ball, and he's got great hands. He's got ginormous hands. When you can catch it with your right and or your left, and you ain't even worried about all this other stuff around you, and then I can go up over you and eat up over your head. This is you have to be able to appreciate the different types of speed, but both of them's ability to play above the ground. All receivers can't do that. To me, that's a huge criteria if you're going to play this game at the highest level.
No doubt. Ooh, hey, man, CC, man, big time knowledge, man, insight. I know our listeners and viewers definitely, they're going to enjoy this, man. We appreciate you joining us, man. Hall of Famer, One of the best to ever do it. One of the best 50-50 catches in the game. One of the best red zone nightmares defensive backs used to face. Host of the new podcast called Wide Receiver One. You can definitely catch it wherever podcasts are found. Talking to some of the best wide receivers to ever do it. Currently still the National Football League. You know he's going to have some greats on there as well. Joining us here, all things covered. Patrick Peterson, Brian McFadden. Chris, anytime you want to join us, man, the floor is yours. Anytime you want to drop any nuggets, football, whatever it is, man, you got an open invite.
Let's catch up later in the year. Let's get Patrick P some wins and everything because I'll be yelling at that TV. Yes. Let me tell you what my wife said yesterday with the kid.
What she said?
We was in New York. No, he didn't. I said, yes, he did. She said, no, he didn't.
Hey, so I was in the studio, you know, doing some stuff for CBS. And have you heard, Pat, I know you haven't heard yet because you were playing, but Chris, have you heard the radio broadcast from Paul Allen?
Yeah.
He was trying to pray it in, it's good, it's good, it's good. Oh,
hey, and then he said, the guy that broke him down was Pete Burchard. Pete was on that 98 team.
Really? I didn't know that.
Hey, Pat, if you want to mess with Pete, things got so bad in that double overtime game. Pete was a special teams player. We had to put Pete in to cover somebody. Oh, shit.
Oh no.
Hey.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. You already knew what was going to happen.
Hey, oh, man, bro, I'm definitely bringing that up tomorrow.
Hey, Pete from Notre Dame. He was covering that tight end like Rudy.
Hey, y'all, Chris and Pat, you always know it's always a great special teams player who's great in the team's game, but you put him out there to cover somebody, be like, oh, shoot.
Oh, man.
Not a good outcome.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. We should catch up later in the football season, though. I greatly appreciate what you guys are doing. Keep making an impact, man, in the communities that you live in, and keep making an impact on the position. Defensive back is a great position. You guys dropping knowledge and helping out the kids, man, so they can play the game at its highest level. I appreciate you guys. Appreciate what you stand for, man. Be safe.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.